Rock.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's reading is the second one from Front Camphor by Et Volsink. Pre-war, Et Volsink in the Hitler Youth. The Volsink family had regularly taken its annual holidays in Germany, the reasons for which were not known by the young Et until he was about 10 years old. The family were able to afford this luxury every year because Herr Volsink was the sales director of a sewing thread manufacturer in the Netherlands, with a reasonable salary and lifestyle in a Europe racked by depression and economic stagnation. In addition, as sales director Herr Volsink had direct business links with manufacturing firms in Germany, in particular the Gutermann's textile thread company, which brought him into regular contact with his German counterpart, Herr Nerscheid. Herr Nerscheid was a member of the NSDAP and an active member of the SA. The SA were the brown-shirted paramilitary wing of the NSDAP, which protected the meetings and rallies of the National Socialist Party, organizing and agitating in the German elections, fighting the communist street gangs, and spearheading the National Socialist Revolution. Herr Volsink had more than a passing interest in German politics, because he too was a National Socialist and a member of the NSDAP, although he was a Dutch national living in the Netherlands. Herr Volsink was careful to conceal his political links at home in the Netherlands, keeping his political uniform and regalia at a friend's house in Germany, and at this stage not confiding in his curious young son. Although Et was a member of the Jugendsturm, the youth movement of the NSB, he was still politically a novice, occupied with the boyish attractions of Jugendsturm rather than its political agenda. Every year, the annual family holiday of 1 week was spent in Germany, at Wernholthausen, in the Sauerland. Et Volsink looks back fondly on these trips. Quote, "A lot of SA people had their holidays in tents at a large farm at Wernholthausen. I went there too with my parents. We had a room at the farm, and what I remember from it, there were enthusiastic gatherings of SA men and their families, days of swimming in the clear water of the brook Venn, and walking tours in the beautiful Sauerland. Every night, ending with community singing of the old NS party songs. Those holidays were like a dream to me. Gatherings of this kind would never have been permitted at home." Close quote. Then in 1936, his father's holiday destination suddenly changed to St. Goar, to a small boarding house at St. Goarhausen on the River Rhine, just opposite the famous Lorelei Rock. Et was used to not talking openly about their foreign trips to his school friends, but on this occasion his father warned him not only to remain silent at school, but also to refrain from discussing it among his Jugendsturm comrades. Et's father emphasized that on this occasion loose talk could jeopardize not only their freedom, but also their lives. For the young Et Volsink, this trip to Germany held many mysteries. During the first day, he overheard a conversation between his parents, in which his father stated that in case the family were forced to remain in Germany, he had taken certain precautionary steps. Et's father had an established bank account in Germany, and the offer of a well-paid job should it prove impossible to return to Holland. The mystery deepened, but for the next few days, there was nothing out of the ordinary. The family carried on the normal holiday routines, swimming in the pool by the Rhine, visiting the Lorelei and other tourist sites, taking the usual walking tours. Et was not keen on their new holiday residence. He did not like the food. However, in the evenings things were better. The family would visit a local National Socialist pub, full of SA men, and decked with swastikas. There, Et was pampered by the kind-hearted innkeeper, and his friend the butcher, who treated the youngster to suppers of fresh bread and liver sausage. There were also a lot of Dutchmen visiting the pub, some of them known to Et by name. Some were regular visitors to his family home in Holland. On the third day of the visit, Et's father took him out for a walk, his mother staying behind in the boarding house. What was different on this occasion was that Et was wearing his Hitlerjugend uniform, which his father had suddenly had delivered from the home of his German political friends. The Volsinks were always careful to keep their National Socialist uniforms safely in Germany for use by Et at the Versportlager and his father's NSDAP functions. They walked to join a crowd of people gathering along the main road which flanked the River Rhine. The mood of the men was festive, and there were large numbers of SA men and lads of the Hitler Youth together with uniformed girls from the BDM. In his Hitler Youth uniform, Et felt at ease and excited. The crowds were singing and cheering, celebrating, passing around bottles of Rhineland wine, of what occasion Et Volsink became suddenly aware. Down the road came a column of armoured cars, draped with swastika flags, and behind them marched battalions of German infantry, swinging southwards from across the Rhine and deeper into the previously demilitarised Rhineland. The cheering crowds showered the marching columns with flowers. The Wehrmacht was defiantly reclaiming the Rhineland for Germany. When the first units had passed, the Volsinks made their way to the pub, and there Et listened to older National Socialists discussing the events they were witnessing. For Germany, this was a critical period. Hitler had taken a huge gamble, directly challenging the French and British Allied powers. In the terms of the armistice at the end of the Great War, the treaty, Diktat of Versailles, had not only reduced Germany's army to a fragment, but had declared the Rhineland a demilitarized zone, where Germany was forbidden to station any kind of armed force. By marching his newly expanded forces into the Rhineland, Adolf Hitler was not only reclaiming German sovereignty over the territory, but confronting the resolve of the Allied military. The possibility of war as a response by France, Britain, and Belgium was very real. This was the reason for Et's father transferring his bank accounts and valuables to Germany. As an active National Socialist, it would have been suicide to return to the Netherlands if war had erupted back then in 1936. The days passed slowly, as the newspapers of Europe poured out their versions of events, propaganda and counter-propaganda on every page, an avalanche of diplomacy and diplomatic protests, but no war. The Volsinks stayed in St. Goar for 10 days. Then, when the international tensions subsided and the possible threat of war faded, they returned to the Netherlands. Life returned to normal for Et, but the eyes of the youngster were opening to the differences between the dynamic, well-organized society in Germany and the confused, impoverished conditions in the Netherlands. Up to this time, Et had not thought too deeply about the political ideology he had begun to serve, but the events of 1936 caused him to settle the foundations upon which his National Socialist convictions would be based. He was greatly impressed by what he saw as a well-structured, caring society. As he became more politically aware, he recognized the power and direction that the National Socialist movement gave to Germany and its people. Et began to listen more intently to his father's political views, how his father was an economic National Socialist, a fervent admirer of Dr. Schacht, the German finance minister, nicknamed Hitler's banker. The family holidays in Germany now had an added interest to the younger Volsing. The long conversations in swastika-decorated inns, the meetings and socialising in party rooms, at the KDF swimming pools, and at the outdoor NSDAP gatherings. Its summer holidays would last from June until the 1st of September, and the bulk of this time would be spent in the Reich, either with his parents or with the Hitlerjugend at the Wehrsportlager, or in the company of his aunts. One of his aunts was also an active National Socialist who had a long-established friendship with two SA men and their wives. His aunt's trips to Germany and elsewhere outside Holland were always missions, as far as Ed could determine. The purpose of these trips were never discussed with Ed, but the first stop on any trip to Germany was usually Munich and a business call to the Brown House, the headquarters of the NSDAP. Ed visited National Socialist camps in Austria and visited France in the company of his aunts, so he was able to compare the different countries at first hand. He quickly became involved in the spirit of the NS camps, singing the songs and joining in the activities. Ed was to join the Hitlerjugend while still remaining an active member of the Dutch NS youth organisation, the Jeugdsturm. In time, he came to regard the Hitlerjugend as his first duty and held Ausland status, travelling secretly from the Netherlands to attend camps and rallies in Germany. The trips to the High Alps of Austria were where Ed Volsink learned to ski, high up in the snow line in the summertime. Among his German comrades, he learned to hike across the mountains to the Hutten Mountain Inns and was taught how to climb the mountains and glaciers. The training and skills he learned in the Wehrsportlager and on his alpine holidays would one day be put to less sporting use in the forests of Russia, the mountains of Yugoslavia, and the snows of Finland, but the political ideals he learned in Germany would stay with him all his life. Ed had first visited Germany as a child in 1931, but he took no real interest in events there at the time, merely the curiosity of a child in a strange country. By the age of 11, he was a member of the Hitlerjugend and consciously aware of the differences between life in the Netherlands and life in the Third Reich. In addition to the family holidays in Germany, Ed also visited the Reich as part of the Wehrsportlager for Ausland Deutschen. These training camps were run by the Allgemeine SS in cooperation with the Hitlerjugend. For the younger boys, aged 10 to 12 years, the emphasis was less on defence and more on sport. There was plenty of discipline and trained instructors who introduced political education wherever possible. The SS Security Service, based in the RSHA, also took a keen interest in those attending the Wehrsportlager, and Ed Volsink would become part of the operations of the RSHA in later years. Initially, it was without him realising to what extent that involvement was to be. In the summer of 1937, Ed received notice from the Auslands Youth Department of the NSDAP to attend the Wehrsportlager. This would be the fifth such camp he had attended since joining the Hitler Youth, and was part of the secret political life he and his family lived. The Wehrsportlager were held twice a year, and Ed received notice through an undercover NSDAP contact who lived in his hometown. The agent was a quiet-living German immigrant, the owner of a local jewellery shop, who discreetly acted for the NSDAP in that part of the southern Netherlands. Herr Ulrich, the jeweller, was Ed Volsink's personal lifeline in the democratic sea of the southern Netherlands. Together with his devoted Prussian wife, the jeweller helped Ed whenever possible. Nobody suspected that this quiet man and his wife were such important figures in the National Socialist network. Even Ed's father had little contact or interest in Herr Ulrich, since they served different sections of the Auslands NSDAP. Like Herr Volsink, the jeweller Ulrich had to maintain a very low profile, as in the Netherlands, any pro-Hitler sentiments branded the person a potential spy. Ed was notified about the Wurzburg camp in a coded telephone call. Herr Ulrich would telephone the Volsink house and say that the watch was repaired. Ed possessed no such luxury, and the excited teenager would then hurry to visit Herr Ulrich. Once he was at the jeweller's, Ed would be hustled into the living room behind the shop, where he would solemnly be handed his marching orders. Ulrich was proud of Ed's achievements, and would congratulate the lad whenever he was destined for a higher-level camp. Herr Ulrich would study the marching orders and advise Ed on what he would need to take with him, what kind of camp it would be, and what to expect, looking out the railway and public transport details. Then the agent would contact party members along the route to Germany to help provide help and hospitality for Ed during his travels, finally supplying the lad with letters of introduction and recommendation to the camp commanders. This level of support could have been obtained from friends and colleagues of Herr Volsink within the NSNAP, if Ed had so wished. It would have been relatively easy to approach them, since many high-ranking members of the Dutch NS organisation were regular visitors at the Volsink home. However, Ed realised that it was better to use the existing network, and the fewer people who knew about his methods, the better. It was, of course, only natural that Herr Volsink took an interest in his son's plans, and he would study the travel details carefully. It would not have been good parental policy to allow his son to travel so far from home over a 3-week period without ensuring that the itinerary was accurate. The doubt Herr Volsink cast on the travel plans was usually followed by the spoken thought, "The Führer's Reich has no boundaries." On the day of leaving, Ed would take a third-class train seat to Venlo Kaldenkirchen. Kaldenkirchen was the first German village at the border crossing. There were strict controls. Everyone had to leave the Dutch train, pass through the passport and customs control on foot, and then board the German train. Once on the German train, Ed would locate the toilet, and concealed from prying eyes, would change from civilian clothes into the Hitlerjugend uniform. He had learned early on that you could travel a lot easier that way. A youngster of 13 or 14 years of age, travelling in a friendly but foreign country, needed a lot of help and information. This was especially true in the less sophisticated travelling days of the 1930s. The uniform itself brought respect and a willingness to help from German travellers. Plus, the uniform was designed for travelling light, with plenty of pockets, a good sharp knife, and a water bottle. Once safely in the Reich, Ed could obtain assistance quite easily from anyone, but as a shrewd Dutchman, he only chose to ask uniformed NSDAP members, particularly SA or SS men. As soon as his status as Auslandsdeutsch or foreign German, Hitlerjugend heading for the Wurzburglager was established, they would perform real wonders to help him. Sometimes this meant a free ride in a truck over 100 miles or so, as in 1937. The unbelievable good luck to negotiate lifts in cars of party members as far as Munich. Once at Munich, he was able to trade in his unused rail tickets for cash and took the train over the last stretch to the Alps, arriving at Tietdorf. The 1937 summer camp took place in the South German Alps of Bayern, so Ed's journey was a long one. Neighbouring Austria was not yet a part of the Reich, but Ed was familiar with its mountains from his frequent visits with his aunt. Due to his incredible good fortune in travelling, Ed arrived at the training camp a full 36 hours early. He presented himself on arrival, and was immediately taken to the camp commander, an H.J. Bahnführer, who was in the company of a middle-ranking SS officer. Ed was warmly welcomed, he remembered, as a lost son returning home after years of absence. The commander looked through Et's files, and his good luck continued. Instead of being assigned to a cleaning or repair squad, he was allocated to the camp reception staff. The SS officer, who was responsible for political instruction at the camp, read through Herr Ulrich's letter of introduction and told Et that he knew Ulrich well. It seemed that the two had grown up together in a small town, and both were ex-members of the original Hitlerjugend. Those had been the dangerous years of the 1920s, when the NSDAP were fighting on the streets to gain power and recognition against the street armies of the communists and social democrats. On several occasions, during the 3 weeks of the camp, the SS officer would tell Ed stories of how he and Ulrich had fought and survived, often in dangerous situations. Ed compared these events with his own circumstances and learned some valuable lessons and life-saving tricks. Mainly, these lessons were how to protect his small Jugendsturm group during their weekly sessions, moving every Wednesday night along a deserted channelway to a village where they had a section in need of training. The work in the reception section of the camp was a real treat for the young Volsink, meeting youngsters from all parts of Europe on their arrival. Some of them were known to him from previous camps, some were new acquaintances, but all shared the same problems of being Hitler Youth in the threatening conditions of their homelands. Although German was the official language of the Wehrsportlager, there were no restrictions on which languages could be spoken between the lads socially. On the day that the camp officially began, the atmosphere changed completely. Strict military discipline and procedure took over. There were long marches, camping in tents in the thin alpine air, shooting on the ranges, parades and barrack cleaning duties, and digging foxholes, which Et detested. There was also realistic combat training, utilizing the natural features of the Alps with rock climbing and crossing the glaciers. The exercises in the snow line were hard. Et's Austrian holidays had prepared him for this, but for many city dwellers, training in the snow was difficult. In addition, there were other discomforts. For the first time, the boys in Et's group were using the standard German army rifle, the Mauser K98. This was something of a heavy weapon for a boy of 14, and Et nursed a painful right shoulder from the recoil. The first shots on the range were the easiest, because the instructors clasped the lads in their arms to steady them. But later in the showers, they all had the black and blue bruises from the rifle's kick. There was a great deal of weapons training at this camp, with close combat and pistol shooting, knife fighting, and a martial art in the form of jiu-jitsu. Every day ended with the lowering of the swastika flag and songs around the campfire. The Hitlerjugend boys left the Wehrsportlager as valuable cadres for their home units. The Dutch Jugendsturm did not officially acknowledge the HJ training camps, but did not hesitate to take advantage of those who had the skills learned there. Et frequently found himself acting as training staff at Jugendsturm weekend activities. The Wehrsportlager ended with a farewell ceremony. Gathered before the flag, boys of all nations took the oath of loyalty to the Führer, and then joined in singing the German anthem, Deutschland über alles, followed by the National Socialist anthem, Horst Wessel. As Et was leaving, an Austrian SS Rottenführer invited the group to attend a gathering in Gerloes, Austria, in the next year. The man must have been far-sighted, because in the spring of 1938, the Wehrmacht marched into Austria as Adolf Hitler joined his motherland to the German Reich. And tomorrow we will continue with Et Volsink, 1940, The Invasion.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.